Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. It's great to have you with us every week as we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on a2zen.fm, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So many, as I say, many opportunities for you to take a listen to our interviews, hear what our guests have to say, and we look forward to hearing from you as well via email. I'd love to hear from you. Just send me an email. I could give you several email addresses that would all get to me, but suffice it to say, let's keep it simple. Richard@richarddugan.com. How simple is that? Richard@richarddugan.com. Someone told me the other day, boy, you're lucky to have gotten that. I said, well, I suppose so. But I chalk it up to the universe's timing, and I didn't have to seek out the person who already had it. It was available, so away we go. Richard@richarddugan.com, the email address. We hope that you will send us an email. Let us know what you think of the program. If you have any ideas, suggestions for topics. Not that I'm ever short, but I'm always willing to take a look at new ideas, new concepts, and so forth. That's what this program is about. New paradigms for a new world. And what a new world it is that we live in, and it's constantly changing. Things are moving forward more rapidly than most of us would like to think about. And one of those aspects that we're going to talk about is internet, the web access, and connectivity, if you will. As a matter of fact, we are connected to our guest today. Her name is Ann Catherine, and Ann, you are a returning guest to our program. It's great to have you back with us.
It's my pleasure to be back.
The last time we got together, we were talking, of course, about the one book that puts it all together for us, having to do with, I mean, we could sit here and talk about Facebook and MySpace, and I mean, the list goes on of all of the various social networking websites, Twitter and so forth, which of course now you can use on your phone. It's just amazing the things that are available. It's just astounding what's out there. And your particular expertise now, having worked for, some 30, 40 years as a therapist, is dealing with this whole aspect and this over-connectedness, if you will.
Yes. The world has changed, Richard. It's changed completely, and it isn't going back.
You mean there's no way we can turn the clock back, huh?
There isn't. And interestingly enough, as I talk to people around the country, there's a longing. I hear a longing as people describe what life was like when we had phones that had cords on them and answering machines that were in boxes and televisions. Well, they like their remotes, but I hear a longing about the time before the digital revolution took over. And there are many who wistfully wish and hope it might go back to that. It isn't going back. The whole world is now based digitally. However, we can each choose how deeply or how broadly we want to participate in this. So we can take ourselves back personally if we want to, just as long as we realize the world is advancing on this basis now.
Obviously, we're talking about boundaries in an overconnected world, and that is not only the subject of our conversation today, but also the title of your book.
Yes.
And it's one of those things that, when you say that, when you talk about people who long for the days prior to the digital age, I mean, I immediately flashed back, and I don't remember how old I was, but I was probably preteen. And the image of the front of my parents' house in the afternoon after school, and I and my brother and other neighbor kids are in our parents' front yard, and we're playing kickball. And the reason we could do it in the front yard was because there were no fences around the yards, the front yards, along the street on which I lived.
Mm-hmm.
There were palm trees, and we put many balls into those palm trees. But that's what I flashed
rubber
back.
Rubber coconuts.
Exactly. Rubber coconuts. I remember, too, when they would trim those, and those rubber coconuts would fall.
Bounce.
But I think about that, and I'm going, my gosh, there was either television, which my parents were always, encouraging us to go out and play when the sun was up. But I also remember another aspect, and this will tie into the aspect of safety and security when we're talking about the digital age. I remember when I was growing up, we had a game that we played where it was the equivalent of hide and seek, but it was a little more intense than that. But it was more that we were able to traverse the entire block from end to end, the alley, some of the yards, the backyards, and the shrubbery for hiding places, without fear, without concern, other than obviously being found out by our co-players, if you will. And that was a wonderful thing. I've looked at Google Earth down to the street level of the neighborhood in which I grew up. And a few years ago, there were stone fences or chain link fences around every front yard on the block, both sides of the street. And I thought, wow, what has happened? And I don't know why they chose to put up these fences. I don't know what their reasoning was, but it was such a beautiful place to live. The grass lines, you might have a little hump or rise dividing the property line in the front yard, but that was about it.
That was it.
Then you'd have the driveways. And then another stretch of two lawns side by side, and then a couple of driveways, and then two more lawns. I mean, this is the outside world. This is where we spent most of our time.
That's right. I remember I just recently moved back to my hometown, and I looked at my range. I went as far as four blocks west to a big park and three blocks east. We did troll alleys because you never knew if something interesting would be thrown away, and it was fun to look in people's backyards. And also on the east side, there was a horse in a stable in a pasture, and so that was always fun to talk to Robin. And five or six blocks south, only one block north because there was a big street. And I look at that range and I thought, I would never let a child roam that range today. But we all just thoughtlessly considered that entire territory our territory.
Oh, yeah. And it's amazing. And again, this particular program isn't one of nostalgia per se, but I think that for our conversation, I think it's important to take a look back at the way things were. For some who remembered, if you were born probably, if you were born before, oh, I don't even know what the year is, but let's just say if you were born after 1980, most of this stuff is foreign to you.
Well, especially if you've always, throughout your entire life, you've been born into the age of digital devices. And we're talking about a child migration from outside to inside, and from being in community. I never even stopped to count how many different kids I played with over that wide area, but it was a bunch of kids.
Yeah. And I'm still trying. Go ahead.
And seeing kids today, maybe having one friend, maybe having two, but primarily communicating with other children through a device.
I'm trying to figure out how the flu is transmitted if everybody is on their devices and not making physical contact with one another.
Why do we have flu?
How is this happening? I don't understand.
Money.
Absolutely. But, well, you know, it's interesting that, we have all of the various devices that we do, and moving forward into the digital age, I have to say that in the last few years, we've created some new boundaries as far as the digital world.
Good.
We used to have direct TV. We no longer have that. We do not have cable in our home. Mm-hmm. What we have now is nothing but on demand, in that if we want to go to Netflix or Hulu or any of the other services that are out there, and I'm amazed at how many there are now. And they're mm-hmm. growing, the various channels. And some you pay a stipend for, some you pay a monthly fee like Netflix, and some are just free, which is kind of neat. And so we have seen things that we would never, ever have seen before. There's one movie, and I will share just the title with you, but there's one movie that my wife and I are constantly recommending to people over and over again, and we've watched it three times. It doesn't seem to get old to us. It's a movie called Upside Down, made in 2013. I mean, it's extraordinary, the out-of-the-box thinking that went into the creation of this film. And but the thing is we've seen documentaries and short films and old television shows, let alone some of the new stuff. So there's that aspect of we've sort of set up this boundary where, okay, we're not just going to let unfiltered stuff come into the house anymore. We get mm-hmm. to filter. We get to decide. Mm-hmm. That doesn't look interesting. Let's watch a few minutes of that. Don't like it, back out of it. You know, just move on mm-hmm. to something else. Don't waste our time. And we're spending more time with our animals outside, playing with the dogs, doing other things, reading. Well, actually, reading from a book that we hold in our hand, which mm-hmm. yours also comes out in print. Yours is actually in a printed form that if anybody would like to get a copy of Boundaries in an Overconnected World, they can do so. Matter of fact, they can do so by going to your website, which is oneandcatherine.com. And we certainly encourage you. We're going to be linked to you as well, so they can go to our website and click on the link, as well as listen to this interview. But that is sort of an outward, outbound, if you will, boundary setting, in a manner of speaking.
Go ahead.
But we also want to talk about inbound, because it's hard these days. I haven't figured out how to stop the Dr. Oz emails from coming in, or the weight loss emails, or the male enhancement emails, or just the plethora of these things. And they say the only reason you're getting this is because you went to this website and you did this and that and the other thing. And I'm going, mm-hmm. I don't ever remember going to that website. Mm-hmm. And that's the other aspect of it, too. And we will maybe start out our main conversation here by saying that if you are using the internet, wireless or otherwise, a cell phone, any of the new digital technologies, you must go into it acknowledging there is zero privacy. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement, although there are things you can do that will limit their access to you. And we also have to take a whole lot more responsibility than we used to in terms of what we expose ourselves to online. There are computer settings, however, that we can use that will cut down on intrusions and tracking. And it's up to each one of us to learn how to do that, which, of course, is described in the book, and to take the time to do it. And in the long run, it's worth the time. What you're talking about, that there's a new, a recent, I wouldn't say it's new anymore, but there's a recent trick that foils those of us who are conscientious, I'm being one of them, about when I get an email from a company, I go to my server's blacklist, I put that on the blacklist so that I don't get any more from that company. And I do that faithfully. which gets me lots of peace of mind because it cuts down on my email intrusions. However, there's a new trick somebody's figured out about some sort of rotating email address so that the junk mail comes in, it has exactly the same format. It's everything is in the same place on every single one, but the email address changes every time, which means that doesn't do any good to put it on the blacklist. You're not going to get another email from that source anyway, but you're going to get another email from a different source with the exact same format. And the only way out of that I can think of, they do, of course, have a link that you can say, I don't want any more of these. I don't ever press a link I don't know. I copy it and then write it in manually to discourage the email. But it doesn't do any good because I've just discouraged that one. And whoever's come up with this scheme, this is not touching. And the only way I know out of that is to change your is to go to a different email address for yourself,
But then you're
which is a lot of
changing.
trouble.
It is. It really is. And I'm wondering too, and of course this creates a frustrating chain because there's no end to this just the same way. And that is forwarding from one email address to the other, and hopefully each one of them will have some kind of a filter that might block that. But again, you're still setting up an enormous chain
Right, I
of
wouldn't
emails.
forward any of my own from my old to my new. There's no point
Yeah,
in that. I'll still get all of it.
exactly. And the thing is that there are times when you have so many contacts in your email in your contact list. I mean, I have thousands. I don't even know where to begin to start deleting those. Somehow they've been added to my contact list, and I've got to go in there and figure out, do I go ahead and just dump the whole contact list and start over? And the same thing on my cell phone. It's the same kind of thing because they're linked together now. Email and contact lists on your smartphones or whatever it is that you're using. I mean, it's as if the digital age has created a whole new industry, and it has nothing to do with the digital age. It has to do with maintenance and management of the data. I have looked and searched for an app that will scour my contact list on my phone and either merge or delete any duplicates. And it's not doing it. I've used two different apps, zero results. I still have duplicates. And I also am concerned too, and I know that this was I don't know if it's a myth or if there's even any truth to it, but this goes back to the late 90s into the 21st century, having to do with viruses on computers. And there was always the undercurrent by a lot of folks who felt that the companies that were selling the antivirus software were actually behind the creation of the viruses, i.e., they were creating a market by creating the virus. I mean, it's not like that's never been done before in history.
Yeah,
We're going to
it's hard to
create a problem.
know. It's like a Mission Impossible plot, but it's hard to know. It's hard to trust. Nobody knows what the little digital software codes are actually saying in anything we buy. So we have to take care to choose from a company that we know that is reputable. And so many of the apps that are very attractive, we don't really know who that company is or who owns that company, so that we might download a free app thinking, oh, this is cool, this will be fun to do. And that app can be owned by a company that then that markets thousands of products and sends out hundreds of emails. And because you've downloaded the app, you now have a business relationship with that company you don't even know about, which is a possible source of a bunch of new intrusive emails that all of a sudden you're getting is probably connected to something you've downloaded.
Exactly. Now, and that's another, just a sidebar, in terms of downloading and installing software, even on your PC, if you're still using one, or your tablet or whatever, many times they give you two options. You can either run the express installation or custom.
Mm-hmm.
I always select custom. Because if you select express, everything they want to be downloaded onto your computer and installed will be. And that mm-hmm. means toolbars for your browser from who knows what companies, mm-hmm. Changing your homepage on your browser, a myriad of other little pieces of software that will, you know, you have a free 30-day trial and then it's an evaluation mode, et cetera, et cetera. So I make sure that I go through and I check off or take the checks off those boxes so that I only get the software that I want. But then again, there's still no guarantee.
There isn't.
You know, and I know that there are those who are so frustrated with the digital age, they have no use for it, and they are still in the pen and paper mode mm-hmm. and are doing fine. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
And that's the thing to realize. You can choose that. If the unknown people out there or businesses who are doing these things get too greedy, more of us are going to back out. It because we value our time mm-hmm. and we're getting aware of just how much time all this is taking. I encourage people to log, to keep a log, handwritten, mm-hmm. on a notepad by your computer. Everything you download, every app you download, so that you're writing down, check, it goes on my phone, check, it went on my computer. Company, parent company, and date. And then pay attention, for one thing, only do one, say, a week or every 2 weeks. And then notice what's changed in intrusive emails. Did you just get a new flock mm-hmm. the week following app X? Well, then you know those emails are connected to that app. And then you can start tracing and where this is coming from.
Yeah.
We're going to have to fight back, not just calmly yeah. accept whatever they dump into our machines.
And you know what's really, I find kind of sort of an irony, is that the general public is more upset about the allegations of the NSA in our federal government tracking us and watching us without proper authorization, and the private sector doesn't need authorization. They mm-hmm. can do this now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm like, really? Why aren't you upset about that kind of stuff? And it's like, well that's just the way that it is.
This is a system where it's hard to get caught.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Everything that gets put onto your computers or thrown into your emails, for one thing, it's designed to be seductive. It's designed to pull your attention toward whatever their commercial interest is. But it's also really hard to monitor, mm-hmm. and they don't have much fear of being caught. So yeah. if you're not afraid of being caught and you have no intrinsic moral fiber, then there's nothing stopping you.
That's true. Ann, I want to take a break here. We're going to come back and talk more about this. We're going to talk more about what you are doing in this particular realm. And we're also going to talk more about boundaries in an over-connected world. We'll even discuss that specific element because I think it's important to touch upon in that what constitutes over-connectedness? Have we ever been that way before? We'll do that when we come back. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're asking you to stay with us as we continue talking with Ann Catherine here on Tell Me Your Story.
Oh, come on, walk with me. Talk with me. Tell me your story.
Not a lot of flesh and blood in the digital age, but there is a lot of flesh and blood when it comes to Richard Dugan and Anne Catherine. Anne Catherine, the author of Boundaries in an Overconnected World. Richard Dugan, host of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we are just getting started in a manner of speaking when it comes to this particular subject. And Anne, I wanted to touch upon an area. We're going to get back to a lot of this digital stuff. But again, a reminder to our listeners, Anne Catherine's book is Boundaries in an Overconnected World. And of course, her website is the number one, AnneCatherine.com. That's the number one, AnneCatherine.com. I wanted to ask you in your practice, what have you noticed in terms of the new conditions, syndromes, disorders, etc., that have come about because of the breaking of boundaries that you have brought to the forefront in this particular work and what we're talking about today, on the part of the people that come to you or that you are aware of? Is there anything new, or is it all old stuff that's sort of just been digitized, so to speak? I'm just curious, is there more paranoia? Is there more of a laissez-faire attitude? I don't care. It's no big deal, you know, et cetera, et cetera. What's going on in the therapeutic world in terms of the impacts from our digital world?
People are much more isolated. And children are not learning relationship skills. People get the idea of a boundary violation through intrusion. I mean, we get that if somebody hits us in the face, that's a boundary violation of intrusion. The fist has come through our personal limit and hurt us, hit our skin. But there's another type of boundary violation, and I call it a gap violation or distance violation. And this is when something that should happen isn't happening. So, for example, if a baby is crying and nobody tends to that baby, and the baby's just left alone crying with nobody checking to see what the problem is, that would be a gap or distance violation, and it would affect the development of trust for that child. It would grow up with a very early lesson that it can't trust that it will be taken care of. So that's a gap violations, and gap violations are just as powerful and destructive as intrusion violations. So I say all this to say that the digital world is creating massive distance violations. Across the country, everywhere I go or talk on the radio, I hear stories, I've talked to professors that say children are losing the ability to communicate in regular face-to-face encounters. Students come to university and they've been practicing texting and tweeting, reducing messages to the lowest possible, fewest possible letters. So articulation is suffering. The ability to express feelings directly, to handle relationship issues, has suffered.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry that we are, that if parents don't take more charge of their children's exposure to interaction, that we're going to raise a generation, more than one generation, of children who become adults who don't have relationship skills.
You know, and what I'm imagining, I'm sure that I'm going to be around long enough to see this generation, as we will call it, holding public office, running corporations. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be able to see the results of what our digital world has done.
The way it spreads out.
The way it spreads out, exactly. And sadly, I have a feeling that it may mirror to some degree another movie, going back to movies, that I have seen a number of times as well. And I remember the first time that I saw it, it was both funny and scary at the same time. It wasn't a scary movie either. It was a movie called Idiocracy. And basically, it's about a couple of people who manage to get themselves not exactly transported, but they find themselves 550 years into the future. And man is still around and he's still doing stuff. But man, you look around at the way things are. Just the hospital scene alone, where there's a gal behind the counter and he tells her what his problem is. And she looks down at a keyboard that is nothing but pictures. Nothing but pictures of different ailments. You see like you see a leg and there's a break in it. Okay, broken leg. Or you see some spray coming out of their mouth. Maybe it's a sneeze. They have a cold. Okay. And I mean, that's what it would come down to. And so I I'm just thinking, and yet I talk with people on this program over and over again, Anne, and I ask them, are you optimistic about the future of humanity? And when I start thinking about the things we're discussing and thinking, well, if this generation is headed in a direction where they're not going to have the communication skills, then how are we going to get anything done and built and created? I'm really curious. Are you optimistic based upon just what little we've talked about here on this program?
I'm about half and half. I'm not optimistic about the mass population. We have gotten seduced by this convenience. It looked convenient to move everything to digital processes. And it looked like it would save time and it looked like it could save money to shop online. But we've got to be paying attention to the entire cost, to what isn't happening, where the gap violations are. The true time suck for a poor phrase, but it's what happens when you go online and you get distracted and you go here and you go there. The changes it makes in the brain to have your mind interrupted. Even just having, and I can't remember if you told me this or a different host told me this, about that it changes the interaction of people to just have a telephone on the table, not even using it, not even anybody looking at it, but it creates a more shallow interaction if phones are just in sight.
Interesting.
So,
when I
look at that, I'm discouraged. And then I hear these stories of parents who've looked at this and said, no way am I going to let my child get carried away by this. And they're setting good boundaries. They move the computers out of the child's bedroom into a central location, just like I recommend, so they can see what the children are doing. And people are using the tools, some of the tools I offer, to initiate discussion with their children so that they're staying active in their children's digital lives. So I think, you know, we're smart. Humans are smart. And we have tools. The book is a tool, for example. There are some terrific websites, which are listed in my book, about making considered decisions about how much exposure children have and where the boundaries should be. So I think people have the opportunity to figure it out. It's as long as we don't let ourselves just get seduced over and over by the apparent convenience.
Exactly. You know, I'll give you an interesting example about shopping online and how the human connection came into play. My wife and I have been shopping for a new washer. So we go online and we're at a specific website, and she finds a washer that she likes. You know, the last thing is that the guy's never going to choose the washer. You know, he's going to look at the price.
Right.
But she finds
one, how it works.
Right. But she found one that she likes, the brand, and she likes the price. So she shows me. I say, hey, great. All right. So I said, okay, well, we're waiting for certain things to fall into place so we can place the order. And as this is taking place, I go online. I find the model again, same website. And I think, I need to find out how soon we could get this delivered once we place the order. So I put the zip code in, out of stock. I'm going, wait a minute. Then why is it still on the site? Makes no sense. So I called a phone number. I actually called a phone number and I talk with a guy, and I'm on the phone for 15, 20 minutes with him, asking him all kinds of questions about, well, you know, I realize you don't have control over this, but I don't understand why this is still on the site. If it's out of stock, it shouldn't be on the site. And he says, well, let me check around and let me see if this is available anywhere in the country. Because, you know, we're living here in California. That's what he was focused on. And we get disconnected. I think, oh, great. Well, I'm not even going to bother calling back. So I actually go down to the brick and mortar store, and I go to the department, and I talk with a guy directly. And he gets on his computer, and he goes through the process, and boom, it's out of stock. So he says, well, I'll tell you what, let me see what I can find as far as the comparable. So he finds one. Turns out the one that is available is in essence replacing the one that is now out of stock. They've changed the model number, but it's basically the same unit. Mm-hmm. And we get the product for the same price. And we order it and da-da-da-da-da. I had to go to the human being face-to-face in the brick-and-mortar store in order to complete the transaction.
Yes.
Which didn't bother me because I was going to that side of town anyway. And, you know, it worked out and I would have anyway. But that's one of the things that, and of course, we had a nice little conversation. He finds out I'm in radio. He's asking me all kinds of questions, you know, and making a nice little relationship. And when we were finished with the transaction and we completed the transaction over the phone, I said, hey, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. That did more for me in terms of feeling like I actually completed something than having maybe done that online.
Yes. Yeah. It was much more satisfying.
Yeah. I mean, it was a challenge. There's no question. But these are the kinds of things that there would be most people would just give up. They say, forget it. I'll go somewhere else. I'll go somewhere else online. I want to shift gears a little bit here when we talk about trust. I want to go this direction in terms of trust, in terms of the websites. But I also want to talk about what you make reference to, a term that I have never heard before called boundary continuum. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But let me ask you about trust. There's a website that touts that it can help you to increase your brain power. I think it's Luminosity or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I saw the commercial. I remember when I saw the commercial for the first time. And even ever subsequently when I've seen the commercial, the same thoughts go through my mind. Who's behind this website? Mm-hmm. What is it that they are what's their agenda? What are they really trying to do in terms of this website? And I remember in the late 90s, actually maybe 96, 97, 98, the running slogan about the internet was you couldn't trust anything on the internet. I mean, it was literally in its primitive stages back then, even then. But now it's become so sophisticated, they're trying to market to us at every turn.
Every turn.
And so,
even when you don't know it.
Exactly. And so when I see something like a website like this, and I have a game. It's called Shambhala. That's the name of the game. And it originally came on like 6 or 8 or 10 floppy disks. For those who don't know what floppy disks are, Google it. actually, it was actually focused on a legend of Shambhala. I beg your pardon. The name was actually Heaven and Hell. But what it was a series of like 100 or 200 games that you would sort of play, or puzzles that you would figure out of different types. And each time you figured out one of the puzzles, it would give you a little phrase or saying or something like that from the legend of Shambhala until you completed all 121 levels or something of this nature. And then you would have completed the course, if you will. That's kind of like what it was. But it was a brain teaser, and I had a lot of fun with that. And I still have, A, the floppy disks, but I've also managed to transfer it to my hard drive so that I could play it. And it's sort of an early version of Windows, but it's DOS-based. You know, it's one of those kinds right. of things. It's not text where you type
Google in. Google that too if they don't know what that
exactly.
is.
Exactly. but I had a great deal of fun with that. That to me, I could go back to that and trust it and know that I'm not being taken down the primrose path and
That's
that suddenly
right.
I'm going to be getting all these emails telling me that I need to get this, that, and the other thing. Whereas
right.
these websites that encourage you to come there and watch this and watch that or buy this or that. I don't know. I'm honestly, I hate being so skeptical and cynical, but is that a fair position to take, or is that another one of those syndromes and concerns that you're dealing with in your practice?
I think that's a very real concern that you really don't know what's behind the curtain. And I've decided that if a teaser attracts me on a page, I've decided to write down the information about it and go look at that at the library. If I really want to know, mm-hmm. I'll go look at it at the library computer. I'm just all about closing up my computer so that I'm in charge of what comes into it as much as possible. And that's how I'm going to do it.
Do you consider that to be somewhat of an inconvenience?
It's a huge inconvenience. And so that's why I'm saying pay attention to what amount of time it's really costing you. Like, if you don't know, and you really can't most of the time know mm-hmm. what company owns something, you're like, you talked about the brain teaser thing. I mean, the brain luminosity.
Mm-hmm.
How can you know what company owns the company that owns the company that owns that website? You really would have to spend a lot of time searching that. For my book, I did just that. I would go to the company that was apparently the owner and then go tracking, and I could find parent companies that owned 50 to 100 websites that did all sorts of different things. And the minute you go into any one of those, that constitutes a business relationship. So even if you said, even if you've signed up to the do not call, do not send an email register, it doesn't matter. If you establish a business relationship, they can, that overrides any do not bother me list.
Mm, okay.
And so inadvertently, and actually probably the odds are very good that if you sign up for anything on a single website, then you've just accidentally created a business relationship with 100 companies or more.
Or more, yeah.
That then can contact you by email and phone. And I'm starting to get phone calls. I'm thinking, what did I do to get this?
I'm getting phone calls,
and every time
calls,
yeah. I ask, how did you get my name? And then they hung up. Then they hang up.
I'm getting phone calls and they're recorded messages mm-hmm. about consolidating my credit cards, which I don't even have. I have no credit cards, and yet I'm getting these calls.
Yeah. So you did something.
I did something. Oh, my God. And I don't even know what it was.
Yeah.
What about one of the newer browsers, Chrome, put out by Google, has a feature built into it. It's called Incognito. And basically what happens, according to Chrome, is that it will not allow websites to track you. And it will not keep the websites that you visit while incognito in your history or keep the cookies and so on and so forth.
Well, you can do that in your own computer. You don't need a program to do that for you.
Well, this is just built into the Chrome browser itself.
Well, but what I'm saying is you don't know what else is in there.
But exactly, right? Exactly.
And Google is very slick, and I use it all the time, but still, Google owns a lot of companies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I'm just saying you can set the setting on your own computer in your own browser without
doing anything special, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Without doing anything special.
Right. Well, this is very interesting. Just a reminder to our listeners, you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Ann Catherine. Her book, Boundaries in an Overconnected World. I want to touch upon a term I mentioned just a few moments ago that I've never heard before. I've heard both words independently, but not put together in this context. What is boundary continuum?
Well, what I mean by that is that there's a continuum. Each of us put ourselves on a continuum between convenience and safety or privacy with regard to our use of the internet. Some people don't pay any attention. They don't worry about the controls. They just go wherever they want to do. They don't want it to be inconvenient. They Right. want it as convenient as possible. So they don't limit trackers. And when we do that, it is convenient. We can go to any website and they'll say, "Hi, Ann, glad you're back. Are you still interested in those red widgets?"
Mm-hmm.
That would be me not putting any controls on tracking or little spy bots. And so it's convenient. Your password is remembered everywhere you go. You're recognized. They know what you like. On the other end of the boundary continuum is taking the time to set no tracking, no exposure, everything you can set on your in your preferences setting for your browser. And there are also sometimes settings that you can do for your email server. Going through every one of those and seeing how to set them, you can set privacy settings at Facebook, and you can take care to not sign in to other sites using your Facebook, so that you're deliberately signing in to any site you go to yourself and not going through Facebook to do it or anything else.
Yeah.
Because you'll be invited to sign up using Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't create that relationship between Facebook and the other things that I do. I keep it separate.
I'm the same way.
But it's less convenient.
Yeah, I'm the same way because I don't have a Facebook.
Yeah, that's it. That's a very good way to prevent that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do have Facebook, yeah. And then they think, oh, that's convenient. I'll use Facebook to sign in.
Yeah.
Well, now you've created a link between Facebook and this interest of yours. Do you remember a movie, since you're a movie watcher, wasn't that long ago, with Tom
Cruise?
Cruise. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And it's in the future, and he's walking around through somewhere, and his eyeball is red. And so all the billboards, which are all digital billboards, are responding to him. Hi, Tom.
Minority Report.
We have a sale on so-and-so. Mm-hmm. You know, it's according to Tom's interest. You remember that movie?
I do. Minority Report.
Minority Report. That's it. Yeah. Well,
seen
we've
that a
done
few
it
times.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's happening. It's not using our eyeball, but in our computer every time you're anywhere and there's a pop-up ad for, in my case, it would be quilts or cats.
Mm-hmm.
That ad is directed specifically toward me based on my interests.
I had a great experience of that not too long ago. I was looking for something in particular on a different website. I go back to my home page, which is a Yahoo page, which has weather and other things that I like to have all concise, congealed together. And they have an ad banner across the top. And so I'm over there at this other website looking at, I don't remember if it was shoes or belts or whatever it was. And I go back to my Yahoo homepage, and in the banner ad across the top are the very things I was just looking at.
Yes, immediately.
And I'm going, really?
Yeah, really.
How many of these do you think I really need? You know, it's like, okay, if I had bought them, would the ad still show up? Probably.
Oh, yeah. And then they don't care.
But then I'm going, how many of these? I just bought one. And you think I'm going to go back and buy another one?
You think they're logical? They just want to
sell.
Bombard. That's right.
Gracious.
That's right.
And I've even been told, I've been encouraged by some folks, to have Facebook. I do have a Twitter account, but I rarely ever use it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm connected only because I need to be connected to the emergency services that use Twitter to notify the media about certain things.
That's good.
And so I just, you know, it's, and then people have told me, says, you need to monetize your website, you know, charge people X number of pennies or dollars to access the interviews. I says, no, that's not what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about making, I mean, yeah, would I like to have 5 or 6 or 7 digits in my bank account? Sure. Wouldn't we all? But not at the expense of not being able to provide this information to anybody and everybody who would like to listen to it.
Good for you.
I mean,
great.
I mean, I don't know what the percentage is. You probably have access to the stats more than I would, even though I could probably Google them as well, as we continue to give Google more free ads. Advertising here. In terms of the number of people, the population of America in particular, let alone the world, and the number of people who have access to the internet and the information, obviously is growing. I mean, you look at China with 1 billion people plus.
Yep.
I can't imagine.
Everybody connected.
Just about everybody's connected. I mean, I'm sure there's hundreds of villages throughout China that are not connected just yet, but they're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the United States sees China as nothing more than another market field to mine, you know? That's from my perspective, from what I'm seeing, and this goes back even to the 70s when Nixon, for the first time, went to China, supposedly opening up, you know, that the Silk Road, if you will. It was all about... Back then, of course, they labeled it as, you know, just being, you know, trying to keep a handle on other countries and their defense and so forth. But now, forget defense, it's marketing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all marketing.
Mm-hmm. It is huge. Mm-hmm.
And these dating sites are the same thing, aren't they? I mean, that's about marketing.
It is. And they're asking for information they don't need to match you well to a compatible partner. They're slipping in here and there questions that are all about marketing. And if you take the time, which I encourage anybody who's going to do computer dating to do, to read the privacy statement, they basically say, you have no privacy. We'll use this information any way we want to, basically. There's one company that's much more restrained, and that's I haven't checked it this week, but up until now, Harmony.com is the most restrained of those. And there's another company that exposed private information that doesn't have anything to do with marketing, but exposed private sexual information. So be very careful about using computer dating, and you're required to answer the questions. You don't get to pass. You don't get to say, not going to answer. You have to answer, or you can't fill the form out, and then you can't go shopping or be shopped. And so there are risks. And I talk about how to keep yourself as safe as possible in the book on computer dating.
Well, Anne Catherine, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time again with us here on the program, talking to us about your book, Boundaries in an Overconnected World. And the website is oneannecatherine.com. That's one, the number one, Anne, A-N-N-E, Catherine.com. You can find out about more of the work that she does and touch base with her via email. Or do you have a snail mail address on your website if someone wants to send you something in print?
You know, I don't remember, but I'll go check that out. And if it's not there, I'll put it there.
Okay. Well, Anne, I want to thank you again. I really do appreciate it. This was a very informative and a lot of fun as well.
Good. I'm glad, Richard. Thank you.
And I'm hoping, too, that we, even though we touched upon some rather serious elements in this program, that we didn't bring people down. We want you to have fun, enjoy in your life, and not be overly paranoid over, you know, anybody looking over your shoulder, even though they are. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.